Kande Miri and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America on Thursday, June 2nd, 2016. We'd like to thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. I'm Dimyake Mwakalielie. Here are our top stories this evening. 11 Zimbabweans braved the chilly weather to protest against Zimbabwe's social, economic and political problems.
We have got 14 more days to go. Our demand today is we want our monies from the banks.
More than 2,000 workers at sugarcane plantations being earmarked for a state resettlement scheme are set to lose their jobs.
We are extremely concerned with our future because the land that is being pegged is where we are working from, and this means we are set to lose our jobs.
Police want to question Dr. Patson Dzamara once again on photos of a person in captivity said to be abducted activist, his brother, Itai Dzamara.
I was supposed to go there today, but because of other commitments, I could not. I'm hoping that tomorrow I'll be able to make time to go and present the image to them. This is just a formality.
And 15 Zimbabwean women reportedly abused in Kuwait are back in Zimbabwe. These stories and so much more coming up. Stay tuned. Eleven civic society activists yesterday braved the chilly weather in Harare and slept at Africa Unity Square as promised in protest over Zimbabwe's social, economic and political problems. The activists, drawn from several organizations, have vowed to stay at the place for 16 days and 16 nights. Reporter Patricia Modadigwa visited Africa Unity Square today and filed this report.
Led by the Zimbabwe Activist Alliance and Zimbabwe Women in Politics Alliance, the activists' agenda today was to encourage Zimbabweans to reject bond notes to be introduced in October this year, which the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe says are meant to boost subdued exports. Lynette Mudewe, coordinator and founder of the Zimbabwe Activist Alliance, told Studio 7 that Zimbabweans should also reject bank withdrawals as low as $50 per day.
It was a very cold night in the park. We slept in the park, as we said. We have got 14 more days to go. Our demand today is we want our monies from the banks. We are saying, as Zimbabwe Activist Alliance and other activists, we are saying no to cash withdrawal limits. People must be given their money. The government of Zimbabwe must ensure that banks have got money. They must stop all the leakages of cash that is being taken out of Zimbabwe. They must make arrests of people who have externalized funds. People must get their money. How do you justify a person spending 12 hours standing at a queue at a bank to access $50? That is production time. How do we develop a country if people have to work at a bank when they're not employed by the bank?
The Zimbabwe National Students Union has joined the Occupy Africa Unity Square protest. Makomborero Aruzivishe, Secretary General of the student body, said they are now tired of watching while Zimbabweans' fruits of independence are being allegedly squandered by just a few individuals.
The fruits of independence of this country, they've all been squandered, and they are now squandering independence itself. This cash crisis is man-made. Come to the colleges, there's rampant corruption.
Linda Musarira, lead and founder of Zimbabwe Women in Politics Alliance, echoed the same sentiments, adding that the government has shown that it does not care about the needs of its citizens.
We are the ones who face the burden of poverty. We are the ones who face the burden of having no money. We face the burden of lawlessness, of joblessness, because we are the mothers. Mothers are the ones who drive the household. So I am urging all women to come out of their comfort zone and fight for their rights.
Ostello Siziba, who is also among the protesters, said as young people, they have decided to have a voice in national issues, including moves by the central bank to introduce bond notes.
What we is advocating us as young people is that people should not be allowed to be used by one makushka to be given $100 limitations in their own money. The bank should respect the rights of the bankers, and also the people should not accept these bond notes, which are not in any case any legal tender.
The protesters said they'll raise several issues issues per day at Africa Union Square in order to generate debate on matters affecting local people who are struggling to make ends meet due to the current harsh economic environment in the country. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
At least 2,000 workers at the privately owned Togat Hulet's Triangle and Hippo Valley plantations in Zimbabwe's Mashingo province are set to lose jobs as government has started allocating several hectares of land at the sugarcane entity to peasant farmers. Our reporter Gandri Maramba has more details.
Some of the workers claim that the government has indicated that it would allocate 4,000 hectares of land at Triangle and Hippo Valley estates in Chirezi district to landless peasants and traditional leaders. One of the employees, Elias Kwamure, said his future looks bleak as the sugar plantations are his only source of family income.
We are extremely concerned with our future because the land that is being pegged is where we are working from, and this means we are set to lose our jobs. This will mean doom to us as we will no longer be able to look after our families.
Another worker, Emily Makamre, said her children will drop out of school if the government takes over the sugar estates.
I have been working close to a decade and have been able to look after my family and send my kids to school. So this set will affect me, as we have been hinted that 1,000 people in my department will be laid off. It means my children will no longer be able to go to school, as new employers are doubtful if they can pay us.
Temba Gumbo, who is also facing the same problem, questioned the government's move, saying it is ill-timed as millions of people in the country are currently jobless.
Looking at the election manifesto of ZANU-PF, which was crafted in 2013, they promised us 2 million jobs. But now, to my surprise, 2,000 people are said to lose their jobs as it stands right now. For them to create jobs, now they are destroying them. I don't know the meaning of creating. If destroying is creating, then they are creating the jobs. We are very deeply angered by what they are doing. We are now losing jobs. The economic situation is not favorable to anyone. It was better when we were still a job at our workstations.
Although efforts to get a comment from late Minister Douglas Mombeshora were fruitless today, last week he told local media that pegging of the land for redistribution was already underway. He said some of the intended beneficiaries are already complaining that the stands being pegged are unequal. The continued grabbing of land at the plantation over the years has been blamed for the drastic decline in sugar production in the country. This year, the company recorded a profit of only $1 million compared to $35 million in 2015. Zimbabwe embarked on land reform program in 2000, which led to the displacement of thousands of workers. Critics have attributed the decline in agricultural production to the land reform program. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mashingo, I am Gandri Maramba.
Studio 7 is now streaming live talk on Facebook. Be sure to catch us every day from 8:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. for engaging discussions on important topics of the day. Share your thoughts live during the show. Our Facebook address is VOA Studio 7. That address again, VOA Studio 7 Facebook. Don't forget to like us.
Police have, for the second time, asked Dr. Patson Zamara, brother of abducted political activist Itai Zamara, to report at a local police station following the release of a photograph by the Zamara family claiming that the masked person in captivity in the picture with hands tied to the back is Itai Zamara. The family claims that Zamara was allegedly abducted by the Zimbabwe National Army's intelligence unit, an allegation which the unit has dismissed as baseless. Dr. Zamara yesterday met with a team of detectives of the Law and Order section led by Assistant Commissioner Crispin Makedenge and two operatives of the Central Intelligence Organization, who indicated that they wanted to inquire about the authenticity of the information that he has concerning the abduction of his brother. He tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri that he will visit the police tomorrow in the company of his lawyers.
The police asked me to present the image I presented at the press conference. They asked me to present it to them. And so I was supposed to go there today, but because of other commitments, I could not go with the image today. I'm hoping that tomorrow I'll be able to make time to go and present the image to them. This is just a formality. I stated my position in a categorical manner from the onset that the disappearance of Itai Zamara has everything to do with ZANU-PF and state security agencies. And so that RFP falls under state security agencies. And so for me to actually expect anything positive to come out of what if they are reporting to be investigations, I think that would be naive of me. And so in a nutshell, I'm not looking forward to receiving any positive feedback from their end. It took them 15 months to come up with zero lead.
We also heard from the Zimbabwe National Army saying it does not have anything to do or is not involved in the abduction of Mr. Itai Zamara.
That was the obvious response. What more would they say? I do not think that there would be a contrary response to that.
That was Dr. Patson Zamara, young brother of missing activist Itai Zamara, speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri from Harare. Fifteen women and girls who were allegedly abused in Kuwait, where they went seeking lucrative jobs by employment agencies, arrived back in Zimbabwe today in the first batch of a government-funded repatriation. Kindness Paradza, chairman of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Foreign Affairs and ZANU-PF lawmaker, says the girls are part of the more than 200 Zimbabweans who are believed to have been trafficked to Kuwait. Paradza tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye that the returnees shed tears of joy when they arrived at the airport.
They arrived this evening. They were very happy to be home, and they were so grateful to the government for providing air tickets. And this is the first time that the government has provided tickets for our distressed mates from Kuwait. And as Parliament, we're also happy that the government has done that.
What efforts have been put in place by the government, especially the ministerial committee set up to look into the Kuwait issue, to ensure that this does not continue to happen, that girls and women do not continue to be trafficked to Arab states?
We have since notified the Kuwait authorities that our nationals must not enter Kuwait under Section 20 of their visa regime. Two, they've also that they've created a desk where those with their friends or relatives who are in Kuwait or who has gone to Kuwait to look for jobs, they can verify with them to find out whether they are well there or they are in distress.
And where is this desk set up? Where can they find the information?
This desk is with the Minister of Labour, Public Service and Social Welfare. And other Arab countries right now, they are also, those who want to recruit, actually now verifying with the Minister of Labour. And the Minister of Labour is now asking to say all those people who are going there must be skilled personnel, not those who are going there to be housemates.
And what's the way forward after you put them up in the government shelter? What then happens? What about even the people that came back before? Has government assisted at all?
The government has put in place through the Minister for Women's Affairs some income generating activity so that these girls can have some business to do. And also they've put in place psychologists, doctors and health personnel to work with these women.
That was Kindness Paradza, chairman of Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Foreign Affairs. He was speaking there with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye from Harare.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, we'll take a closer look at the selection of a presidential candidate in Zimbabwe's newly formed opposition coalition. Stay with us. But first, a look at regional and international news. Somali officials say security forces have killed the gunman who attacked a popular Mogadishu hotel bringing the death toll from the assault to 24. A new poll indicates American voters do not believe that presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump will succeed on his plan to build a wall along the Mexican border, and they do not think that Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton will curb secret money in politics or restrict the power of Wall Street. And finally, the remains of 33 Australian soldiers killed in the Vietnam War were returned to their country today after more than 50 years. You're listening to Studio 7, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. Some Zimbabweans are skeptical about moves by opposition parties to field a single presidential candidate in the 2008 general polls, saying it is likely that they will be rocked by divisions before the polls. Some of the critics argue that the current crop of opposition leaders in the coalition of Democrats formed this week do not have the political stamina to dislodge President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF from power. Their major concern is that two opposition parties, the MDCT, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, former Vice President Joyce Mujuru's Zimbabwe People First, are not in the coalition, making it what many say is a group of weak parties. The coalition was signed by five opposition parties, namely the MDC, led by former Industry Minister Professor Welshman Ngube, Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe, led by former Energy Minister Elton Mangoma, former Finance Minister Simba Makoni's Mawambo Kusile Dawn Party, the Democratic Assembly for Restoration and Empowerment, and the Zimbabweans United for Democracy. Well, how will the party select a presidential candidate, and will this not divide them? First, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks with Professor Ngube, who says everything has been put into place to ensure that the selection process works.
We all have committed ourselves to remain within and to work for the coalition regardless of who the collective determines as the candidate. Obviously, when we do select a candidate, that candidate would have to be selected by consensus, or at the very worst, by substantial consensus of the greater majority of us, taking into account a variety of factors. Of course, who do we think will be best suited to defend and protect the principles and values of the coalition? Who do we think will receive the greatest support from ordinary voters, members and non-members of the coalition, etc., etc.? We, of course, are aware that this is going to be a delicate, difficult issue, and we'll approach it with the necessary care and the necessary planning, as well as sensitivity to all the considerations that must be borne in mind.
Professor Welshman Ngube, when it comes to selecting a presidential candidate, don't you think that this is going to divide you as a coalition?
Well, the full modalities in terms of the details are yet to be developed. It is the principle, the framework that we have agreed, and I've sought to summarize to you. We are not naive. We're not born yesterday. We know all the things that we are warning against, those challenges, and we'll be alive to them at all material times. But what matters the most is that we have looked each other in the eye, and we have said we must commit to each other that you do not come into this coalition with the belief that you will be the candidate. If you desire that, please stay out.
And you think people are going to abide by that?
Well, they have committed themselves to abide by that. Those who will join later, we will ensure that they commit themselves to abide by that.
That was Professor Welshman Ngube, leader of one of the MDC formations. But political analyst Ibo Mandaza of the Southern African Political and Economic Series says all the leaders of the coalition of Democrats are not presidential material.
They must create a slate before the election, agree on who should be president, presidential candidate rather, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's what they should do. And then I don't agree with the idea of allocating constituencies to this party and that other party and so on. Let the parties or the individuals compete at constituency level, but agree beforehand who is your presidential candidate. That's how you do it. Without doing that, I think all coalitions will be a flop, which they've been in the past. Then you can also go and agree who should be the vice president. You might even want to say who should be the Minister of Finance and so on and so forth.
So now, talking about a presidential candidate as things look right now, you see there are these five parties. Who do you think can be presidential material there?
No one.
What do you mean?
And there's no one who can succeed as a presidential candidate among them. And as long as the other two big parties are not involved, those all the others are minor parties, in my view. Clearly so, and everyone knows so in Zimbabwe.
What do you mean about being a minor party?
They're minor parties. They're small parties.
Can you justify that scientifically?
Scientifically, I mean, first of all, in terms of public opinion, second, in terms of numbers, and thirdly, the possibility that the bigger parties, i.e. Morgan Tsvangirai and Juru, might form another coalition. So we are too far, in my view. The coalition talks must be broader and more inclusive. As long as the two big parties are left out, we have not arrived yet.
Don't you think that these parties can have some kind of division when they're looking for a presidential person?
Well, my understanding of the dynamics is that the smaller parties are moving too fast, okay? They're moving ahead of the big parties, and I think that is that's flawed at the outset. And they know it. We all know it. It could be that the big parties are being arrogant, that they think they have the upper hand. And I think that is the nature of politics in our country. So let's agree that a coalition must necessarily include everybody, must be all inclusive, right? Anybody, including us who are not in political parties, must agree long before election who the candidate should be. And I would go further. I would say that the consultations for the coalition must involve the need to effect a generational change in Zimbabwe to come 2018. We must agree, Joyce Mujuru, Morgan Tsvangirai must agree, Tima Makoni included, the Welshman, they must agree that they've had their chance. They can no longer lead this country. It's time to bring younger people, and there are many, including those in the diaspora, 60% of you professionals there. Until that is done, we're playing, okay? So in my view, we're not anywhere near the coalition. We shouldn't be celebrating anything like that. It's a non-event in my view.
That was political analyst Ibo Mandaza speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. And ZANU-PF's Deputy Information Director, Psychology Maziwisa, says the coalition of Democrats is a non-starter.
It's a coalition of zeros, really. ZANU-PF remains a formidable party. It's like having a coalition, a whole string, a whole array of zeros. Zero plus zero plus zero will still give you zero. And ZANU-PF continues to command millions and millions of people as its supporters. And we evidently demonstrated that when we held our 1 million men march. So this is a tried and tested party that no form of coalition will ever unseat, because it's a grassroots-based party. And that's what these guys need to understand and appreciate. Quite evidently, they don't recognize that. But it's their fault, not ours.
But it appears as if they are saying that come 2018, there will be a formidable challenge actually to ZANU-PF.
That's what they are saying, but what do the facts say? The facts are very clear, and they are pointing to the fact that ZANU-PF remains a very strong party. And the fact of the matter is that we had a very successful march. Unprecedented numbers of people came in support of ZANU-PF. And those are the facts. So it doesn't matter what people say. People always talk. But politics is about numbers. And it's about considering what the facts on the ground actually say. And the facts are very clear, and they're in favor of ZANU-PF.
But why can you say ZANU-PF is popular, yet the economy is not performing well? And people generally can't even access cash at banks, you know? How do you justify that?
Well, you're mixing two issues. You're saying why do we say ZANU-PF is popular and the economy is not performing well? Well, those are two different things. People love ZANU-PF, and why they love ZANU-PF is something that you need to ask them. As to the performance of the economy, well, everybody is very clear about the fact that we are in a very constrained economic environment, and the constraints are not domestic. They are largely external, and those who support ZANU-PF, those who love ZANU-PF, appreciate that much, and that is the beginning and end of the story.
That was Psychology Maziwisa, ZANU-PF's Deputy Information Director, speaking there with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. Zimbabwean communities in mining zones such as Chiadzwa in Manicaland province are barely benefiting anything from their natural resources. This from Darlington Muyambwa, a natural resource governance activist who is one of the Mandela Washington Fellows coming to the United States this month to do leadership studies for 6 weeks. Muyambwa says most mining communities are getting a raw deal not only from mining firms but government as well. He speaks with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo.
I feel very excited with this opportunity to participate in the Mandela Washington Fellowship because for me it presents an opportunity to learn and share with other young people of my generation for issues that pertain to our work as members of the civil society. So I'm quite excited for that opportunity as well as for the opportunity to network with other organizations in America and learn some best models of how to better do the work that we do here in Zimbabwe. I also feel quite excited because I know I'll create a network of other organizations that could assist me in my career projection. The fellowship is quite prestigious and very iconic in its nature because, of course, of the ideals that Mandela stood for and also because of the pioneering work of President Obama. So we are quite excited to be part of that, and I'm looking forward to participate fully in the program.
You are an advocate for the rights of people living within mining communities. Would you say they are benefiting from their natural resources?
I wouldn't say they are benefiting. I think there is room to really ensure that they benefit. And I'll give examples that there are particular areas in Zimbabwe, like the Great Dyke, where you find most of the platinum mining companies who have made pledges to community share ownership trust scheme, and they are quite responsible in terms of their corporate social responsibility. These areas are better in terms of ensuring that benefits accrue to communities. But then you would have communities like the diamond mining areas in Chiadzwa, Marangi. The communities are reeling in poverty and they really need socio-economic empowerment, and this has not come their way. I would say in such areas, mining has not done justice. But rather, the communities are suffering from issues like water pollution, issues like a failure to produce from the land that they have been relocated to. They also have concerns around adequate compensation.
Darlington Muyambwa is a natural resource governance activist and a 2016 Mandela Washington Fellow, and he's coming to the United States this month. He spoke with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts of the Women's Roundtable, Praxedes Jeremiah and Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye, will be discussing the impact of human trafficking on families. As we reported today, 15 women allegedly abused in Kuwait returned home today. If you wish to join the show, call us at 001-202-619-2077. That number again is 001-202-619-2077. You can also send us a message or number on our WhatsApp 001-202-465-0318. That number again 001-202-465-0318. And also remember, we're live streaming on Facebook, so be sure to log on and of course like the page.
Cause we're moving right out of Babylon, and we're going to our father's land. Yeah. How good and how pleasant it would be before God and man, yeah, to see the unification of all Africans. Yeah. As it's been said already, let it be done. Yeah. We are
the music there of the late Bob Marley, coming to you from Studio 7 here in Washington. That song, Africa Unite. Before we go, a quick recap of our top stories today. 11 Zimbabweans braved the chilly weather to protest against Zimbabwe's social, economic and political problems. More than 2,000 workers at sugarcane plantations being earmarked for a state resettlement scheme are set to lose their jobs. And police want to question again Dr. Patson Zamara on photos of a person in captivity said to be his abducted brother activist Itai Dzamara. And that's our broadcast this evening. We'd like to thank you so much for tuning in as you do every night. Please remember to tune in again tomorrow. Meantime, I'm going to leave you in the safe and capable hands of Ntungamili Nkomo, who will be presenting to you the Ndebele Bulletin. From me, good night. Have a wonderful evening. See you.